This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. Yes. The ESPN app at Sirius XM Channel 80 and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Nuggets haven't played that poorly. Fact is, there's the point differential in this series is zero. 325 points for the Lakers, 325 points for the Nuggets, but the Lakers are up 3-1, partly because of a blown defensive assignment. Plumlee and Grant failing to do whatever it is they thought they were doing on that Anthony Davis three-point shot. Wide open, he hit it. And partly because LeBron James in high-leverage moments is an all-time great. Obviously he's an all-time great, but I mean, even in high-leverage moments, he's an all-time great in the sense that he can consistently elevate when you need him to the most. And it's harder to elevate when you're already at dizzying heights. Easier when you have a lot you can do better. In his prime, the only player ever better than LeBron James is Michael Jordan. LeBron is the second greatest player who ever lived. Peak value. And career value, you can put him at number one. I think when we say greatest, though, we don't just mean career accomplishments. We really mean who hit the highest heights. And that would be Michael Jordan. First time he had a single other All-Star. He was unstoppable until that All-Star, Pippen, had a migraine, scored 2 points in 40 minutes, and then they lost to Game 7 to the defending champs. After that, Pippen entered his prime. Jordan never again didn't win the finals in under 7 games. But other than that prime by Michael Jordan, this LeBron James, like, he's not in his physical prime anymore, and yet he's just about as good as he's ever been. Not quite, but just about. And still the best player in the NBA. And by the way, let me say something. I was wrong to put Kawhi ahead of him number one. But this is not the first time this has happened. And someone said this on Twitter. And it's not like I'm hiding from this because I agree. It's something I've actually wanted to talk about on TV and on the radio. Now I got to find it. Someone was trying to clown me for taking Kawhi is the best player and then apologizing. Whoops, sorry, LeBron. Who is it? Someone, Dux Jones. I don't know who that is, but Steph is better than LeBron. Few months later, I say, I was wrong. Giannis is better than LeBron. Few months later, Max Kellerman, I was wrong. Kawhi is better than LeBron. Few months later, I was wrong. He's absolutely right. In 2016, I said, this is now Steph's league. In any other era, LeBron would be better than Steph, but given the rules changes, given the way Steph can shoot from anywhere, handle, the ball doesn't stick with him, the way you could build an offense around him, even if he's limited defensively, it's actually Steph's world. That's why his team won 73 games. That's why they're going to win the finals. But they didn't win the finals. LeBron did. On Steph's home court, in Game 7, when the greatest half-court offense in history only mustered 0 points in almost 5 minutes, the last 5 minutes of the series. It reminded me almost of the Patriots and Giants in 07. The Warriors were about to be called the greatest American team sport of all, like the American team of all time, right? Greatest team of all time, 73 wins, more than 72 from the Bulls, and they beat a LeBron James-led team. Nope, didn't get there. Like when Brady went undefeated with the Patriots and the Giants upset them in the Super Bowl. It's an amazing performance by LeBron. And I came out after that in Sports Nation at the time. I said, okay, I was wrong. Sorry, LeBron, you're still the best in the game. I thought I wouldn't be fooled again. And then it looked to me like Giannis took over. But then Kawhi knocked him off. Stephen A. likes to clown about, hey, on a Friday, you said it was Giannis. And by Monday, he was ranked fifth. Well, I didn't know he was going to get had like that. But he was. And then I thought, no, LeBron didn't get a chance to defend his crown, and Kawhi took it. It's not Kawhi's fault LeBron didn't make the playoffs. That's on LeBron. He always has the postseason to remind us that he's still the best after a regular season that's no better than some of the other guys who are in the MVP conversation, Harden or Durant or whoever it is. And then in the playoffs, LeBron proves his point. He didn't have that playoff to prove his point, and Kawhi made his point. I said, okay, it's Kawhi. Nope. Very next year, Kawhi's not in it, and here's LeBron up 3-1. Dude is absolutely right. Because part of this is like playing the percentages, is trajectory, right? LeBron's slowing down physically a little bit. you know, he picks and chooses his spots where he plays defense, though this year he was much better defensively in terms of the consistency. AD challenged him, and he rose to the challenge. But given that, given his age, given what Kawhi had just done, given the fact that he then got hurt and it cost him a playoff spot, I projected. I was wrong. No one's ever played in his 17th season like this, ever in NBA history. Not close, and that includes Kareem. And what impressed me so much last night was not just like LeBron's putting up like 30 points basically with triple-double all the time, and we're like, it's not such a good offensive game. It's the defense. Who was going to stop Jamal Murray? He was unstoppable. He was unguardable. He was getting layups with his offhand and putting English on the ball from every single which way, and shooting threes and hitting free throws and doing things like Jamal Murray did a couple of things in the last couple games that it was like, that should be on an all-time highlight reel. And LeBron said, him, I'm taking that defensive assignment. And there was no more field goals from Jamal Murray. A couple of some free throws, but that was it. It's an amazing job by LeBron. Here he is after the game talking about D'ing up Jamal Murray.
I know it was winning time, and Jamal had it going. The kid is special, so... you know, tell my teammates that I had him, and everyone else can kind of stay at bay and stay home. And I was able to get a couple stops, and we was able to rebound the basketball, which is the most important thing.
It's amazing. What a job by LeBron James. But this Nuggets team, I have not seen Jamal Murray and Jokic really lead this Nuggets team to one of those great games they had. Let's not forget, like, I don't know how you guys were feeling when you watched the Nuggets Clippers. But the feeling I got after that 16-point comeback, and then they had a 17-point comeback at the half, and then they were down double digits near the half and came back. By game six, I did not feel that 16-point or 17-point halftime lead was safe. I didn't feel it was safe. I just saw the Nuggets come back on the Jazz three times, facing three elimination games. They went 3-0. And then they did it again in game five, down 16. So now they're down 17. I never felt that they were out of it. And then after coming back from 17, I really got the feeling, let me tell you the truth, as surprised as I was that Kawhi choked late in Game 7, I got the feeling like the Clippers didn't have a great chance. Up 10 in the first half. The Clippers up 10. I felt like they don't have a great... How are they going to win this game? The Nuggets starting slowly. It's kind of like... The Nuggets in these seven-game series, in these best-of-seven series, remind me of, like, the Kansas City Chiefs during the course of a game. It's like a pressure fighter. You know, you have pressure fighters throughout the history of boxing. Joe Frazier, Julio Cesar Chavez, you know, guys like that. Rocky Marciano. Where early in the fight, it takes them a while to get warmed up, and they might be losing a few rounds. But you never get the sense the other dude's actually going to beat them. They might not win all the early rounds, but by the end, it's like, oh man, this is a freight train. That's what the Nuggets get like when they get right. They have not been right yet this series, and part of that is the Lakers controlling the glass with Dwight Howard and AD, although AD had a bad rebounding game a couple games ago. But and part of it is LeBron James orchestrating the offense and having a sense for when to turn on the defense. And part of it is just the Nuggets. This might be a team that needs to feel like their back's against the wall before they really start really playing. Like Patrick Mahomes, all last playoffs, down double digits, second half of each playoff game he played in, won every time. Nuggets are 6-0 in elimination games. I think the Lakers are going to win this series. I think they'll win it in six games. I do not believe the first time the Nuggets face elimination, you're going to be able to eliminate them. Doug Kazarian, Daily Wager host, 6 to 7 p.m.
Max, how are
Eastern
you, man?
On ESPN2. What's going on, Doug? I was just giving you a plug before I introduced you, but how are you?
Yeah, no, I apologize to cut you off there. I'm great out here in Vegas. We have the gig here, so we got the brand new studio we unveiled couple weeks ago. Really lucky on that front, and just enjoying life with this apex of all the sports going on. It's just super slammed, as you know.
ESPN sports betting analyst, you're joining us on the Shell Pennzoil performance line, in case you're interested, Doug. All right, here are the storylines. Okay, Last week, the sports books got buried. The favorites won 14 out of 16 games, right? Okay. Why is that?
Well, it's sort of just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes, right? Like, if you think about it, if you flip a coin four times, you're more likely to get 100% heads if you do it four times than if you do it 50 times, right? So sometimes when you only have a handful of games, and a handful meaning 14 games on a weekend, sometimes, and I say sometimes like once every handful of years, so five, six, it's going to be all one way, and just it so happens that way. The only two underdogs that won outright were the Rams, which were like kind of a favorite to begin the week, and it was like a one-point spread. So you almost like throw that game out. And then the other one was the Saints on Monday night, lost as a solid favorite. So really Sunday was a huge bloodbath for the books, one of the worst Sundays they've ever had, especially when you factor in all the states that are now, you know, legal around 20 or so. So just nationally, the favorites. And what happens is, why that's a bad for the books is, it's just the public typically bets the quote-unquote good teams and is willing to lay a number, right? So it's the Chiefs minus points or the Packers minus points or whoever it is. It's always like the Ravens minus points. They'd rather do that than take like the ugly dogs to keep it within a score, ugly underdog. So when all those things kind of come to fruition and the market hasn't settled, like it's only week two, even the betting market doesn't really know who the best teams are yet. There's just vulnerabilities in the betting market. So sometimes all the stars align on a Sunday.
Derek Carr and John Gruden look pretty good so far this year, but not as good. I mean, I can't remember a 1-1 NFL team with a coach quarterback combination that's looked better than Belichick and Cam so far. What do you think of the Raiders at Pats?
Well, it's fascinating because you only have two games to go on, right? So how good are the undefeated Raiders, right? So you have the win at Carolina, and Carolina's defense is really bad. We know that. Now they had McCaffrey for that game, but still they're just not as potent because of that defense. It only returned three starters. Now on the offensive side of the ball, the Raiders look pretty good, obviously with Waller, the tight end, and then Gruden mid-game made the adjustment to Carr's drop back from five steps to three steps. But this is a tough ask, and Max, you've been around long enough. You know some of the terms and handicapping. It's a tough spot, a situational spot for the Raiders to go across country to play Carolina, then come back to Vegas, play a big Monday night home opener, unveiling the brand new stadium, and then going back to the East Coast and facing arguably the greatest coach in NFL history. And on top of that, there's betting stats that prove that Belichick against the spread off an outright loss. So when his team loses, the guy, you know, you saw the sweatshirt with all the holes he was wearing. He was putting in time in the video. 51-26 against the spread in his career.
Wins twice as much as he loses. Wins twice as much as he loses against the spread. Yeah, covers the spread twice as much as he loses after an outright loss. That's a remarkable stat. Okay. Russell Wilson's been great so far. Talking to Doug Kazarian, Daily Wager host, ESPN sports betting analyst, who's joining us on the Shell Pennzoil performance line. Russell Wilson, I think he's going to win MVP because every year it's like a few different names that change and Russell Wilson. And since he's never won, I think he'll win this year. Not to mention he probably deserves it so far. But to me, this game is a lot about Mike McCarthy. The Dallas defense has underperformed in the last several years and is now also banged up. But McCarthy made some odd choices and was very lucky to beat the Falcons. What do you think about that matchup, Seahawks-Cowboys?
It's funny, right? Because the Cowboys head coach is probably arguably the most prestigious coaching job in all of American sports. I mean, you can maybe mention Yankees or, you know, Lakers or Celtics head coach, but like Cowboys are right there, right? And they finally move on from Jason Garrett, who went 8-8 last year, one of the best offenses, and they go to McCarthy, which is kind of, you know, I was actually hosting SportsCenter at the time, Max, and Ryan Clark was on SportsCenter. It was a Sunday when they made the announcement, and Clark just starts laying into him, saying, hey, when I had to prep for the Super Bowl when the Packers were in it as an analyst, but I didn't have to because he had the same stuff in there when I was playing against him 8 years earlier, or whatever the timeline was.
Aaron Rodgers makes it easier for a coach, doesn't he?
Right, and look what happened last year with a new coach, 13-3, and this year he's been even better in terms of his QBR and everything. But he supposedly studied analytics in the 1 year off. I'm not buying it. I think he was just trying to pacify the critics. But you're right, it is about McCarthy because they kept the offensive coordinator in place in Kellen Moore in an offense that was ranked among the top three in a lot of categories. And you just wonder with the defense, and maybe they're banged up a little bit, but they pulled what, you know, stole victory out of the jaws of defeat. But the Seahawks are just
yeah.
So,
that was, I mean, by the way, that was more about the Falcons pulling. Doug, that was more about the Falcons snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. You know, like which they're very, very good at. Let's be honest.
They absolutely are. Julio Jones may not play in terms of moving forward, but he obviously had the big drop last week. I'm not ready to punt on the Cowboys in terms of the season and winning the division, but the Seahawks and some of the couple other teams are definitely like a notch above the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys ultimately win their division, but it's just because the division is not very good. But the Seahawks are first class, especially if they're going to let Russ cook, as we all know from social media. If they're going to let him throw on first and second down and not just make him, you know, steal games at the end in the fourth quarter, then they're actually like a huge force because the offense is just so formidable when he's out there and passing on first down.
Doug Zarian, Daily Wager host, ESPN sports betting analyst, here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Doug, Green Bay at Saints. I mean, any fantasy football player can tell you that throughout the years, if you had Drew Brees at home, you know, like, take him, play him. But this ain't normal, like, at home. And it's, you know, during this pandemic, it's not the exact same thing. And Drew Brees has looked shot so far this season. Let's be honest. What do you think about that matchup?
Well, it starts with Michael Thomas that has helped Drew Brees so much. He was the most targeted wide receiver last year. And then this year, there's very few non-quarterbacks who actually move the point spread. Christian McCaffrey, only a point and a half. Saquon Barkley, a half point. That's what they're worth. I know they're studs in fantasy, but just quarterbacks are the only guys that really move a point spread. Very rarely a wide receiver does, but Michael Thomas moves it a half. So you're talking about a guy who's that valuable. Maybe it should be more. That's what an odds maker told me. It's a half, but maybe it should be more. And then to your point, Drew Brees, his passing numbers, not the straight completions and all that. It's more like the distance traveled through the air. His arm is, you know, fading. He's starting to look every bit of 41. So you start to wonder how good this team is. We've seen guys, some of our analysts this week, say they don't look like a Super Bowl contender. They certainly don't without Michael Thomas. Now, this game is interesting because the public tends to react to what they last saw. We last saw the Saints not look so good, and Green Bay looked great, highest scoring team in the NFL through 2 weeks. So this is shaping up to be the pros versus Joes. The pros, the professional bettors, who trust their sort of math models and power ratings, and they use a lot of data from last year because they don't want to overreact to a game or two or just one game. So you have they think New Orleans is cheap. One guy on our show said New Orleans should be like minus six almost, 5.5, 6, and it's only 3. But the public, again, public will be on the Packers, I think. So this is going to be split, pros versus Joes, because there'll be probably more ticket count on the Packers. But I don't blame the public. It's hard to get behind the Saints team, especially without Michael Thomas.
I'm going through a stoplight for this. They want me to get to commercial, but I need to ask you quickly. KC at okay. Baltimore. Baltimore opened 2.5-point favorites. It's now 3.5 points, right?
Yeah, three's the
great regular season team, Baltimore. You know, and it's not the playoffs yet. What's the play there?
Well, 3 is the most common number and the keyest number in sports betting because so many games land 3. The fact that the Chiefs are getting 3.5, I bet you the smart money is going to be on the Chiefs. But other people I respect want no part of the Chiefs because of their defense, and the Ravens do it on both sides of all. Common opponent was Houston. I think the Ravens cover in a shootout.
Whoa. Look at that. Not only do the Ravens win, they cover an increasingly wide point spread. Doug Zarian, thank you very much for joining me on the Max Kellerman Show today. Look forward to talking to you soon. Tune in for college football action tomorrow as Ole Miss hosts Florida, presented by Goodyear. Coverage begins at 11:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. That's 11:30 a.m. Eastern.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Check out ESPN Audio at Home by telling Alexa to play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. By the way, Niners playing the Giants, no Garoppolo, no Kittle. Giants still might lose that game. You know what the worst part of Gettleman as a GM is right now, Giants fans? The way he says quarterback. I hate it. I don't think I hate anyone saying a word, any word, more than Gettleman saying the word quarterback. What? It's such an affront to my sensibilities. It's like, it's because he's from Boston. He's from like, from that area. You can't be GM of the Giants. The one word you got to be able to say like a regular person, meaning a New Yorker, is quarterback. Quarterback. Remember Daniel Jones, a quarterback. What? What's a quarterback? It's just the worst. And not only that, but because of the Saquon injury, Gettleman's now going to have more rope. He's going to say, well, I need more runway. The plan was working. Joe Judge has him competing. But we can't do play action and all this without Saquon. Devontae Freeman has worked out however he worked out. That's not Saquon Barkley. And now he's going to get more time to ruin everything. That offensive line's like a leaky boat. The pass protection gets better. The run blocking's no good. It's not just drafting and signing. It's development. Don't get me. I can't talk about the Giants. Here's the Niners Giants. Who cares? No Garoppolo or Kittle. Who cares about the Niners right now? And the Giants, just period. Makes me depressed. When the Giants are no good, how much worse is your life as a percentage of your happiness, right? How much as a percentage of your happiness is your life worse when your football team is terrible? Minimum 5%. And then I got to add another premium because Saquon's hurt. Like, even if the Giants are terrible and I get to watch Saquon Barkley, and that's my guy, that's a Giants fan, that's our guy. Okay, you know what? All right, we're going to stink, but we get to watch Saquon as one of our guys. Now, no Saquon. I want to talk about the Rams and the Buffalo Bills. Look, Jalen Ramsey, what was it, a couple years ago? Says Josh Allen's trash. Kind of was a couple years ago. He was young. He ain't trash anymore. That boy good. Josh Allen's, like I said, it's two games in, but he's in the MVP conversation right now. You got him, Stephon Diggs. All of a sudden, he's showing, in his third season, he's showing you what he can do. And the Bills are slight favorites, 2-point favorites, something like that. And they're at home. And the Rams got to travel and all that. But 2-point favorites, I guess now, because home field isn't what it once was, because the stadiums aren't filled to capacity and everything, 2 points or 2.5 points is a new 3 points. Meaning, if you see a team's favored by 2 points at home or 2.5 points at home, the odds makers are really saying this is a pick 'em kind of game, but we're going to take the home team. I'm taking the Rams here. I'm taking the Rams in a mild upset. And I'm taking them for a couple reasons. First of all, this running back by committee, and I know Cam Akers is hurt and they're not at full strength, but Henderson's look good. But the main thing about the running back by committee, like, okay, they have Todd Gurley. It's working with Jared Goff and Sean McVay. Then Todd Gurley's hurt, and he's not the same, and then he's not there. And so they take a step back. They get to the Super Bowl, then they take a step back. But now they got this running back by committee thing worked out. But I don't want to get too bogged down in that. This is my big thought on the Rams right now. Goff and Wentz and Dak, it's all the same quarterback class. Hear that, Gettleman? It's quarterback, not quarterback or whatever that is. And it was hard to see early on who's going to be the best. But when Wentz had that MVP caliber year several years back until he got hurt, it looked like, okay, Wentz is just more talented than these guys. And then Goff, two-thirds through the way through a season, looks like an MVP. You know, how many MVPs can you have on one team? Jared Goff and Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald. This is, you know, like the greatest show on turf, only they also have a stud on the defensive end of the ball who could be an MVP on the defensive side. And they got to the Super Bowl and they lost. But in the once Gurley got hurt, Goff didn't look the same. Maybe he's overly reliant. Maybe Gurley's making him look really better than he actually is. And without that play action threat and everything, it's not the same thing. And then Dak, you turn around and you go, you know what? Dak has not been as spectacular as either guy at his very best, but he's been damn good. And he's always shows up and he's a leader and all those things. And you go, so I went from thinking Wentz is the best. No, maybe Goff is the best. Maybe right now, if you ask, I think Dak, I'd rather have Dak than the other two guys. But the point in saying all this is it's unclear. Like, it feels like this ain't settled. We don't know who the best of these three are going to be, but you can't rule out that maybe it is Jared Goff. Wentz has regressed, and Dak is good. He's a good quarterback, and he might be a great one day, but that's not now. And I can't say that at this moment he's better than Goff. I'd take him over Goff if you make me choose, but I'm not sure that that winds up being the case. The Rams have a quarterback, and they got a coach. You know, McVay, season two, the team regressed. And I remember thinking, if you can't repeat it, if you can't adjust to the adjustments that the league is making to you, because if you're really successful, as McVay was in year one, it's a copycat league. They imitate you, and now all of a sudden what you're doing isn't as special anymore. Even if you're the original and they're the derivative has the advantage of making adjustments and refining it, making it even better. But beyond that, so there are levels of adjustments. Once the league adjusts, can you adjust again? Because if you can't, then what you did in the first place is just a parlor trick. It's not deeper than that. And I was wondering that about McVay. Nope. Doesn't look like that right now. I mean, listen, they went 3-0 to start the season last year, and they're only 2-0 right now. Who knows what winds up happening? But the Rams look good. L.A. looks good. And I'm taking them. Jared Goff and his running back by committee, even if it's mostly Henderson this week, I'm taking them on the road to beat an excellent defensive Buffalo Bills team with an MVP level at very, very, very early on. Play at quarterback from Josh Allen now that he has a real receiver in Stephon Diggs. Nevertheless, I'm taking the Rams in the upset there. What do you think about that, Raj? It's bold-ish.
I think it is bold, man. Going east, all the way out east, a morning game for them.
Bold.
Yeah, their body clocks will be off a little bit.
It's not that bold, Raj. No, it's not that. It's not that hot a take.
No,
I can't just manage. Listen, hot takes.
It's a great Josh Allen.
If you have a hot take 10 times a day, you either have brain damage or you're lying. There's no way you're going to have a hot take about 10 subjects a day.
Yeah, it was a lukewarm take.
Sometimes you have a lukewarm take. Just be honest. It's like
by the way, we hope to get McVay on the show next week, by the way.
Yeah, it's like I always say. It was a keep it 100. No, don't keep it 100. Keep it 90. Give yourself a little wiggle room. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE5W30.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know I'm First Take. I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Before I even tell you about Last Take, you know, because you played a Redman beat, I got something, I got a text video from Method Man and Redman going back probably about a year, talking about Terrence Crawford or something. And like, I'm sitting there on First Take, and we have all these athletes saying, hey, glad you guys are back, Stephen A., Max, Molly, this and that. And one time it was Patrick Ewing saying it. And this is what happens. This is what's cool about the job, right? When you get famous, and there are many people much more famous than me, Raj, but I'm like, if I walk down the street, I get recognized now, right? I'm 47 years old. I've been on TV and the radio since I was 25 on a professional national level. Right. You get like people like Patrick Ewing know your name, and I should be used to that by now, right? But there are some people who, when they say your name, you're still like, damn, this dude knows who I am? And it's not like some recent celebrity. It's always someone from your childhood who you grew up watching, right? So, like, not exactly my childhood, but if Method Man and Redman send me a message, that was like I was an anonymous teenager, right, when they were out. And when Patrick Ewing even knows my name, I'm like, Patrick Ewing, do you know how this dude held it down in New York for how long? Before Derek Jeter came around, Patrick Ewing was holding it down for New York City when the Yankees were no good. Yeah, anyway. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Here's my last take, Raj. The Heat won game one by a possession. The Celtics did not have Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward was also not available for game two. The Heat won by two possessions. He played for the first time in game three. The Celtics won by 11 points. And he played in game four. The Celtics won by a possession. You know what I just realized? I said the point differential in Lakers and Nuggets was zero. 325 to 325. But I just did the math in my head as I was saying that. If the Celtics were minus three, minus five, that's eight, and then minus three is 11, and the and they were plus 11 in the other game, is the point differential also zero? Unless I got the numbers wrong. Both conference finals, the point differential is zero, and in both cases, it's a 3-1 series. Too bad. Could have had more drama even, unless these teams come back. At any rate, had Gordon Hayward been available since the beginning, I think what this indicates is this would at least be 2-2 Celtics, if not maybe 3-1 Celtics. My original prediction was Celtics in seven. Once I found out Hayward wasn't going to play the first two games, or the first game and then the second game, and they were 0-2, I changed it to Heat in seven. Now, that's not my last take, Raj. That's all prelude, okay? That's all prologue, rather. My last take is this. When the Celtics got Kemba Walker, I said, this is great, because Kyrie Irving was a chemistry problem on this team. After all, they played better without him. How does a team have a better record when Kyrie Irving isn't playing, considering his contributions in terms of his skill and talent? Boy, that must be a chemistry disruptor, Kyrie. And now you look at Kemba and you go, he's a little smaller than Kyrie, not quite as good, but damn, if you want to, you can't get a better approximation of Kyrie Irving than Kemba Walker, and he's a good locker room guy. Good for chemistry. Team guy, right? Maybe Kemba Walker's actually the anti-Kyrie. They look the same at first. Kyrie's just a souped-up version of Kemba. But in fact, they're very different because in crunch time, Kyrie is a killer. A killer. Kemba's gone away. He's been okay. Bad defensively. He's little. There's not a lot he can do about that. But offensively, he's gone away. I don't want to see Kemba go out like that. They're zoning up at times and daring him to beat them, and he can't. I don't want to see him go out like that. He's a terrific player, and I'm going to predict, maybe because I want to, that Kemba is not going out like that, and he's going to have a big game, and that will be the difference, and the Celtics will extend this series, because I don't want to think that on this stage, Kemba goes out like that. He's too good a player. So there's my final take, Raj. I hope it was worth the wait. Again, not a hot take. These are lukewarm takes today, but okay, sometimes they're not.
That last one was fire. I hope it comes to fruition. Even my son watches this game, and it was like, man, Kemba ain't doing nothing. You can't defend nobody. They need offense.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.